admire your courage, Miss...
Trench. Sylvia Trench. I admire your luck, Mr...
Bond. James Bond.
Bonjour, Monsieur Bond.
Where's 007?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
My God, what's Bond doing?
Keeping the British end up, sir.
Well, tell him to pull up. Immediately.
Can I do something for you, Mr. Bond?
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Hang on, James.
The thought had occurred to me.
Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking.
You have a nasty habit of surviving.
What they say about the fittest.
Do you lose as gracefully as you win?
I wouldn't know. I've never lost.
No more foreplay.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bond Backwards, where we've been dissecting the Bond franchise, starting from the last movie, which was Spectre, and working our way towards Dr. No, in anticipation for the release of No Time to Die, which should be coming out in November, depending on how COVID decides on letting us watch the film. So let's see what happens if people keep social distance, wear masks, and don't be, you know, idiotic around the fact that there is still a pandemic going on, people. But I'm joined by Adam, who is over Zoom in the United States of America.
When you were young and your heart was an open book,
you used to say
live and let live. You know you did.
Yeah,
great theme.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't spoken enough about the theme songs, I realized, going through this, and they're such a big part of the Bond franchise, and we're about to really go into the golden age, I think, of the Bond theme song, because the Roger Moore era is a bit up and down. I mean, Carly Simon's is great. The Man with the Golden Gun is fun and stupid. This is the one Roger Moore theme song that I think really stands up well, actually, A View to a Kill as well.
I like the one from Fill Your Eyes Only. I quite like that one.
I mean, I know people do. I think I'm an outlier on that. No one is asking you to do that. You have to stop. It's a Monday.
You're like Garfield. I hate Mondays.
I don't hate Mondays, but I do hate when you sing like that.
Silicon chip inside your head is switched to overload.
The silicon chip inside your head is switched to batshit. So just calm it. But the Paul McCartney and the Wings theme for this is, and considering that this is early post Beatles Paul McCartney as well, you know, they haven't been broken up that long.
If you believe the conspiracy theories.
This is not even the real Paul McCartney, but it's a great theme.
Paul is dead.
Yeah, the great theme. Speaking of conspiracy theories, did you hear the one about The Rock, that he is dead and that they're using a clone of him to endorse Biden or something?
I did see that, which
anyway
is...
let's just breeze right past politics because we want this to be timeless. But anyway, if you're listening to this in 2050, if the world still exists by then, go back in time and look up whether The Rock was actually killed by the Democrats.
And if you are listening to this episode now and you live in America, vote, register to vote.
Yeah, just that,
to
that
get
too
that up, get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Also pay your taxes.
Well, let's not make this too topical, although it is topical because this film is also quite racist. And
Like with this film, because blaxploitation films were extremely popular at this time.
Shaft came out in 1971 and this film comes out in 1973. So it's, you know, it's two years into, I mean, Shaft was like a real surprise hit, wasn't it?
Yeah, and also Pam Grier was also starting her career and like in films like Coffee and all those movies directed by Jack Hill. And so the movie was a I would say it could be seen as like it's a film that's paying tribute to the films of the blaxploitation era.
No, it isn't. But then you know what they're doing. You know what they're doing. They're doing the thing we've talked about every single. This is the Moonraker problem. It's the paying poker and Casino Royale problem. The Bond franchise is trying to be trendy. They're trying to jump on a trend.
Yeah, and it also kind of paves the way for the problems that they sort of landed in during Man with the Golden Gun, with the, you know, the Asian stereotypes and trying to tribute the kung fu genre and things like that.
There's so much Orientalism in the first three Roger Moore films, because there's also all the Egypt stuff in
That's true.
Spy Who Loved Me. And and this is just full of like, I mean, I think really we have to speak about it first, because you've just got to get out of the way. I mean, there are loads of really great black performers in this film. I mean, I think chief among them is Yaphet Kotto, who's just a great, great villain and a great actor.
He was very well known for, he was very well known later for Alien, where he played Parker in that film.
And he's in a great episode of Hawaii Five-0. He's in Five Card Stud with Robert Mitchum and Dean Martin. He's in a bunch of stuff, but he's a really good Bond villain, and the performances
very charismatic as well. I think he's actually one of the sort of, I think out of the Roger Moore Bond movies, I think he's one of the more memorable villains, and I think he's one of the more charismatic villains, I would say.
Right, and you've got your Earl Jolly Brown as Whisper, and you've got Jeffrey Holder, who plays the brilliant, incredibly problematic Baron Samedi, and Julius Harris, who plays Teehee, the one-armed villain. But the problem is, the problem with this is that the film trades on, it hasn't understood what blaxploitation is supposed to be about.
And also it gives the impression that everyone in Harlem is part of a crime syndicate.
Right, there's that too. And then, because I think there's only like two or three black characters who are not on the side of the bad guys. It's like Quarrel, the CIA guy, and Rosie.
Oh yeah, Rosie. Oh yeah, the other actor, the CIA agent, is Harry Strutter, played by Lon Sasson.
Yeah, like those are the only black characters who aren't, you have an entire cast of characters pretending to have a funeral in New Orleans. You have seemingly everyone in Harlem and everyone on this particular made up island. What is the name they give it again?
What was it called? San Monique.
Yeah.
Run by a dictator called Dr. Kananga.
Who's also Mr. Big. Spoiler alert.
Names for tombstones, baby.
So you've got that problem. You've got the cack-handed deployment of blaxploitation tropes. But then you also have something which I think is really the issue at the heart of the racism in the film, is this misappropriation and like complete like nonsense stereotyping around Afro-Caribbean religions.
Yeah, the voodoo stuff is a little bit, I don't know. I mean, I went to when
he tricked me with his black magic and his voodoo.
No, but the funny thing is, I mean, I went to one of the days when we were in New Orleans a couple of years ago. I went to,
oh, that was a good trip.
That was a very, very good trip. I went to a voodoo museum. Really, really, really cool place. And actually I think there was a moment in one of the sort of exhibitions there where they actually talked about how movies tend to get voodoo quite wrong in those movies, where it's actually a little bit more spiritual and it's not all about, you know, magic and black magic and tricking people and cursing people and things like that. So there has been a very sort of inaccurate portrayal of voodoo in movies, and I think Live and Let Die is slightly one of them.
The final sequence with the snake ceremony, whatever you want to call it, is like, it's like out of the 1930s. It really reminds me of a scene in an early 40s western called Unconquered, where Gary Cooper like tricks Native Americans into not killing the heroine of the film by doing some kind of like magic mumbo jumbo that's supposed to fool them because they're, you know, stupid or whatever. It's just like it's the same thing in this one. You know, it's this weird cultish stuff, and it just completely ignores so many crucial things at the heart of these cultures in the Caribbean and in the southern United States, which have legacies of colonialism and slavery that just is never questioned or examined in any way, shape, or form.
Particularly so, quite a lot of it in Louisiana and in that part of America.
Right. So it's like, yeah, it is a film which breezes right past that and is, I think is hard to watch because of the, because of these things. And I think the fact that Roger Moore kind of responds to black culture every time he encounters it with kind of like a smirk and a raised eyebrow just does not help at all. Like he makes fun of everything he sees and tries to he goes out of his way to like make fun of it. He also he just sort of, like James Bond always treats people like shit, but especially women and especially non-white people. And it seems to be the case again in this one. And what I think is really peculiar is in Dr. No, which we'll get to, you know, Quarrel, the character of Quarrel in Dr. No is one of the most like mistreated characters in all of the Bond franchise. He's such a great sidekick to Bond, but Bond like just, he's made fun of for having like superstitions. He at one point Bond tells him to fetch his shoes, and so they're like, I know what we'll do in this film, we'll bring Quarrel back. It will bring back Quarrel Jr.
Jr.
Like, that's like bringing back Knick Knack Jr. in the Daniel Craig movies. It's like, yeah.
Don't say that. They might do that in No Time to Die.
Good Connery reference, by the way.
Very, very good Connery reference.
It's a little bit annoying and it's offensive, and especially given the time we're living in now, this film still gets shown on telly, and whatever, fine, but like it does present like a view of blackness in an urban American setting and blackness in a sort of more Caribbean setting, which is devoid of any of the explaining framework that would help understand even like why these stereotypes have arisen. You know, there's no attempt to debunk them,
one of the issues I have with it, when you're introduced to San Monique, it's sort of shown to be like a very poverty stricken place. It's
right and full of like suspicion. It's like the first scene you see of San Monique is the snake ceremony where they kill the spy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite a stereotypical portrayal of like a very of a place that's, you know, primarily, you know, the population is black people. And I think that's a little bit problematic. And I think that's, they could have given that place a little bit more, you know, like they do in Thunderball or even in any of the other.
Well, in Thunderball, it's set in the Bahamas. I mean, it's set in a real country. And in Dr. No, it's set in Jamaica. You know, which is a real place. They just make up a place in called San Monique. What I think is hilarious is that they don't show anything of San Monique, but they do imply basically that it had been a British colony because they put the double-decker bus in there. So it's like, you know, it's a little bit like they've just made a new colony for Britain in a period where, you know, Britain was shedding colonies left, right, and center because of the decline of the empire. There's so much to unpack there, but I just want to just leave. I think basically we can draw a line on it and say, you know, if you're confused, Live and Let Die is a racist film. If you want to know why, like, spend any amount of time reading about, you know, the way, especially in this period, urban black populations were vilified by right-wing movements in America by Richard Nixon, who was in power at this point. You know, like, spend some time reading about that, and as you pointed out as well, like, look at how voodoo's been misused in, well, look at how any like indigenous or colonial religions of colonialized peoples have been used in popular entertainment. I feel like we can leave that there, right? Like,
yeah, I think we've said enough of that. I think that kind of gives a little bit of context to,
so we talk about the film now.
Yeah, I think, okay, so this is Roger Moore's first Bond film. Okay, so yes. Sean Connery has, you know, he came back to do Diamonds Are Forever, and he would come back to do James Bond, but in a different studio and never say never again.
We never speak of that film. Never say never, say never again. Maybe we should watch it together after this is all over. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that'd be interesting. So, yeah, Roger Moore was very well known for TV roles. He was mostly well known for his role as Simon Templar in the TV show The Saint. And I guess by the time he played, I mean, by the time he was doing Live and Let Die, he was like well into his early 40s. And
well, he'd also been in The Persuaders with Tony Curtis, right?
Yes, he was. He was in The Persuaders. That's
so
true.
He was quite well known for that too, I think, at that point.
Yeah, and I think he was, so after, you know, they brought Sean Connery back and then, you know, they brought in Live and Let Die, they brought him in for Live and Let Die, and, you know, he was paid like $200,000 plus a percentage of the profits. And so, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting introduction to him. He's not the cigar smoking Sean Connery Bond we've seen. He's smoking a cigar for the most of the time, and also
he is smoking. Sean Connery didn't smoke a cigar.
Yeah, no. Roger Moore smoking a cigar. I meant sorry. No. And he's also not drinking any vodka martinis. He's like drinking whiskey like drinks or something like that to kind of differentiate himself.
He drinks a vodka drink, and he kills a snake he finds in the sink.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, as a first movie for Roger Moore, I think it's definitely okay. I think, you know, I think it's sort of, I don't know, I think they came into problems with Roger Moore a little bit later in, like, in his sort of error, depending on your point of view, as 007. But I think in this one, there is still that kind of, you know, especially in the scene with Rosie Carver where he like threatens her and stuff, there is sort of that kind of viciousness with his character, which sort of goes away a little bit with each movie. But, you know, it's a nice, I think he has that kind of like suave and swagger and cheekiness about him that sort of, you know, we're seeing a very different kind of Bond, but one who isn't afraid to like, you know, get his hands dirty a little bit. But I feel like if you look at like Sean Connery's portrayal, particularly in the early films, he was very like, you know, he had that kind of swagger, but he was also, you know, but I mean, they downplayed it a little bit, but he was a killer. He was, you know, a man who, you know, as Timothy Dalton said, a man who killed in cold blood, or a hero who killed in cold blood. And I think, you know, with Roger Moore, I think they started off with that, but I think they sort of shed that away very slowly with each movie.
I think we've been hard on Roger Moore, and maybe rightly so, in a lot of these films, but I mean, he does bring something else to the part. I mean, and I just looked on IMDb, like he just finished The Persuaders, like that was his last credit before this movie. So, you know, he'd come from a world of like a campy, fun, spoofy spy show, and I think he takes that persona into these films, and I think it's welcome to some degree because they tried the Connery clone with Lazenby. That didn't work so well, but I do think Lazenby's underrated, and I don't think Lazenby's good, but I don't think he's as bad as maybe you and I have implied in the past, and other people have too.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, Roger Moore has got, you know, a lot of people really love Roger Moore. A few people, I think, who even follow us on Twitter who just think, you know, the Roger Moore films are their idea of the perfect Bond films. And it's like, yeah, sure, if that's your interpretation of what the franchise should be, then Roger Moore nails it. You know, it's like,
yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna say if Roger Moore is your favorite Bond, I'm not gonna get angry with that or say you're wrong or anything like that. If he is your favorite,
You are wrong, but like, you know, we're not gonna get angry, but to
each their own. I think,
right,
you know,
but right, because it is a unique interpretation of the character. He's not trying to do Connery, he's not trying to do something, he's not even trying to do the character in the books. He's just like, I'm gonna play this my way. And there's a great confidence in this debut, and I think this,
yeah,
and
there is.
The Spy Who Loved Me, The Spy Who Loved Me is the best Roger Moore film, but I think this is the second best Roger Moore performance. And I actually think Live and Let Die,
I would agree with that, yeah.
You know, Live and Let Die, if you can stand the racism, I mean, we watch a lot of old films, we watch especially a lot of old Westerns, so you do have to like swallow a lot of problematic shit just to get through the film. If you can swallow that, I think Live and Let Die is a pretty entertaining, pretty good, pretty unusual Bond movie.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, I hadn't seen the movie since I was like a teenager, and I was watching it with Felina in around the time when everything kind of locked down because of COVID, And I hadn't seen the film for a very long time. And I was looking at it because we were watching all the Bond movies back to back. And it was interesting kind of, you know, going from Diamonds Are Forever to Live and Let Die and seeing the differences in the interpretation of the character. And yes, he does bring his kind of campiness to it, like he did, I assume, in The Persuaders or, you know, in The Saint as well. And it's not as bad. I mean, yeah, if you can get past the casual racism, it's actually
it's not casual.
But yeah, casual. Yeah, if you can get past that, it's actually a really, really fun film. And there's some really great action sequences, like the boat chase, the very extended boat car chase scene in Louisiana after the whole alligator farm scene is very well filmed. And it's really good and it's fun. And I feel like it hits a lot of comedy moments. Yeah.
It's new. It's like we haven't really had a boat chase. We had the boat sequence in From Russia with Love, but it's a kind of a new mood. And I feel like the very America focusedness of this film is
probably after Diamonds Are Forever, because they've shot a lot of that movie in, well, they primarily shot that movie in America and Las Vegas.
That's a good point, actually. I hadn't remembered. Yeah, Diamonds Are Forever is also largely set in America, but this is sort of a different, slightly different kind. And I think it's interesting that you don't get a lot of Bond films where he's in New York.
No, yeah. I mean,
in fact, this might even be the only one.
It is the I think it is the only one. It'd be great to see like 007 in like a bigger city in America or just, yeah, or some place like that. I think that would be amazing. Yeah.
But it's funny because outside of, it doesn't really, I mean, and I think one of the problems with this film is that it feels like such a mismatch, this blaxploitation genre and 007. Like it's sort of, it feels like he's really out of place. But I think some of that fish out of waterness works for him.
It does, yeah, because every place he goes into, he feels like, oh, I'm safe. I can sit in a booth and order a drink, and then, oh no, it turns around, and then, you know, I'm in like Mr. Big's like dungeon or something like that.
Yeah, that in terms of plot, the whole Mr. Big Kananga thing is like the most obvious stupid. Like,
it's a little bit confusing. I think it doesn't. I don't know. It doesn't.
It's really obvious that he's pretending to be Mr. Big. So the whole idea that the audience, when he starts taking his makeup off, are going to be like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, we know. Like, and also, yeah. Mr. Big is just not really important to the whole. Like, he's only really important as a vague masquerade. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. And he's only in like two scenes.
Like, right, exactly. So we don't. Anyway, don't want to get bogged down in all of that. But I love Teehee.
Teehee's great. I love that character. And I also like Baron Samedi. I like that sort of that Jeffrey Holder's performance in the movie.
And his costuming and everything. Yeah, he's great. That bit where they find him in the graveyard playing the flute and
they're heading for the hill.
And his whole vibe is just so great. But yeah, I love Teehee and I love the alligator farm sequence. The running across the back of the alligators is one of the great, like, that's just one of the fun. And it's like, yes, that does ultimately become what happens in Octopussy, but like, just in this moment, what
you can get away with it.
Assuming you don't know that there are going to be six more Roger Moore movies where they're going to do all, like, they're going to keep making it sillier and sillier.
Yeah.
You know, you that is fun and it is refreshing to watch. You also, of course, get J.W. Pepper in this, and that's another little bit where you're like, the bit where he pulls
Secret
the guy
agent,
yeah,
yeah, that's
the
a bit little
where
bit
where he pulls the guy over. You're like watching that in 2020. You're just like, oh,
yeah, it doesn't age well.
No, and it's very like the whole idea of like white cops and black criminals in the South. Anyway, it just doesn't.
It's very Burt Reynolds esque, that kind of Southern thriller movies where the cops are like corrupt and things like that. It's like White Lightning.
Yeah, at least the cops are sort of, at least the cops are hopeless, but just the sort of atmosphere around it is a bit uncomfortable. But it's nice to have you know, the CIA on board, and Felix Leiter is a great addition, and David Hedison is the only guy who's played Felix Leiter twice apart from Jeffrey Wright, of course. And
And also I like that line, the reference to his character in the movies, like, watch out for sharks. And I'm like, no, Felix, you watch out for sharks.
Can you say that in Timothy Dalton voice?
No, Felix, you watch out for sharks.
Mr. Angel.
Oh, we've already become firm friends.
Hi, Dougie.
Here come the fuzz. Feel free to spoof.
Stop,
through.
Stop now. Stop.
Sorry,
stop now.
Sorry, sorry. I got. I fell down a Timothy Dalton rabbit hole.
Yeah, things were about to get nasty.
Hey, Dougie.
Anyway.
We were talking about.
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Of all the Bond films, this is probably the one where you and I have been to the most of the locations together.
That is true. Yeah, we have been.
We've been to the Caribbean on holiday when we were very little.
Yes, we've been to Louisiana.
We've been to New York as recently as a couple of years ago for my 30th birthday.
That is true.
We had a good. Do you remember that day out we had in Brooklyn? That was fun, wasn't it?
That was really good fun in Williamsburg. That was wonderful.
Yeah. Living it up like hipsters. We had oysters and drank cocktails, and I remember we got the subway across to Manhattan again, and I needed to wee halfway, so we had to get off and find a bar. And
that's true. That was a nice bar, actually. I can't remember the name.
Yeah, somewhere in the Bowery. I haven't rediscovered it. Anyway, and then we've also been to New Orleans and the swamps around there. You know, so
that's true. Like, yeah,
that's going to be a difficult travel round. anything else before we go into the fun stuff?
I mean, we haven't really talked about Jane Seymour as Solitaire.
Fuck. Yes, and also the cards, the tarot cards with the 007 on the back.
Yeah, that's
are you for that or against it? Like, what do you?
I don't know, the whole bit where he seduces her with the tarot cards. I think that's a little bit problematic.
Oh, it's a bit rapey, yeah.
It's a bit rapey. I don't know. It's along the same lines with the barn scene in Goldfinger, where he seduces a lesbian to like sleep with her and then foil Goldfinger's plan. It's a little bit on that plane.
Yes, and
I don't know.
The whole idea that her religion and his and Kananga's religion is bullshit, and yet when she has her virginity taken from her by Bond, she's no longer able to do the bullshit magic behind the bullshit religion. It's like, well, hang on then. What the hell are you implying? It's like, is the James Bond franchise implying that the virginity is some kind of holy quality? I don't want to get into that.
It seems a little bit. I don't know. I don't really know what the hell they were trying to do with her character.
The women in this film get such a... This is a bad film for Bond girls. Like, Rosie is treated like... Rosie is disposed of in such a heartless way, and she's treated like this dumb, like, superstitious, hysterical woman. Like, you know, to say nothing of the racism of that, just the whole... Like, she spends half her lines are screaming. Like, it's just so...
That is true. At the very least,
there is an interracial sexual thing encounter between her and Bond.
Yeah, first black Bond girl.
It's at this time that was still rare in any film or television. So whatever, but still,
yeah,
it's so messed up, and the whole thing with Solitaire is messed up. But what do you think? My question is the 007 on the back of the tarot cards.
Yeah, a bit silly. It's along the same lines with the 007 on the golden bullet in the next one.
Yeah, but that's different because Scaramanga's put that there deliberately. Yeah. In this film, why does Kananga have cards which have 007 on the back?
I don't know.
Well, that's the whole point. That's what I'm saying.
It's a bit silly, yeah. I don't know. I guess it was running with that theme of after Goldfinger when they disarm the bond and up the bomb and it goes to 007. So maybe that was like a running joke that they were having with the movies or something like that. Or maybe like his...
No, it's branding. It's just like, but they've just put the branding on the... I feel like it's there as an Easter egg. I don't know. It's a dumb Easter egg. It's like an Easter egg to the face.
Yeah, Dr. Kananga, you're going to get killed by 007 later in the movie.
Oh, by the way. Okay, well, anyway, I'll save my stupidest bit. What do you want to do our fun stuff?
Yeah, fun stuff. I think the extended boat chase is really fun. I think all the sort of gags with the wedding and things like that are really enjoyable. And
is that your best bit?
I think it's definitely one of my favorite bits in the film. I would say the bit at the end when he saves Solitaire from in the snake bit with the where he's got the magnum, I think that's a pretty cool... I think Roger Moore just kind of really looks the part of a spy in that scene. I think for me, I think that's a pretty cool moment where you really feel like, yeah, he's getting into the groove of being James Bond. And also, I mean,
even though it's a bit like,
Yeah, it's a little bit, yeah. But I think it's nice that they sort of change it up a little bit from the Walter PPK, just to kind of to say, this isn't Sean Connery, this isn't George Lazenby, this is Roger Moore and his interpretation and what his look of what Bond is going to be and what his...
I mean, he looks great in his little turtleneck and his big...
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I mean, he's not wearing a kilt like in one of the Bond movies.
Yeah, or like a pink shirt and a wig, like Connery wasn't the last one. Which one is your favorite?
I know we've talked about the boat chase already, but I'm gonna go with that scene because I think that's quite a tight scene, and with all the music and stuff, and with the snake, because you know exact, because you've seen the beginning scene, you know what's gonna happen, so you're sort of building up, like being like, oh, Bond, please save Solitaire and things like that.
So you don't endorse racism or like the old sexist trope of the damsel in distress, you do think that bit is good.
Yeah, I think as a well made scene, if you can just skip all the stuff that's already there, like you mentioned, I think it's pretty good. I think I think it's fine without sounding like I endorse that sort of thing.
Well, I'm coming down on Alligator Farm in a big way. I love that. Which obviously leads to the boat chase.
Yes, I would say the stuff after when he saves Solitaire, I think that's where the film falters. I think it wasn't that the sort of ending with Kananga didn't really work. I think that's my least favorite.
Oh, I will say though, a backup for favorite bit is the train fight. I love a good train fight.
Yeah, it's a bit like Robert Shaw in From Russia With Love.
Or Jinx in, what's his name? Jinx? No.
Mr. Jinx, yeah.
Mr. Jinx, not in, Jinx from Die Another Day, but Mr. Jinx.
Spectre.
I think my favorite, I am going to go with Alligator Farm because that's just really fun. And, you know, I always love when they introduce like gimmicky wildlife stuff into Bond movies. What's your stupidest bit?
Stupidest bit? The dart that comes out of the side mirror in the car.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's a really stupid bit. I don't know. That just feels like some scene out of like a spy show that was coming out of that time. I don't know. It just seems...
That's like just Thunderbirds level, yeah.
It is a bit, I don't know. It's a bit silly. I don't know. I feel like the New York stuff, they could have really... I don't know. I feel like given the location and given what New York was in that period in time, because New York was just like, it was near bankrupt quite a lot. The mafia were kind of running it and stuff. They could have really done something really noir-esque with it. I don't know. But yeah, I feel like that location was squandered and not used to its potential. And I think that scene in particular was a little bit silly.
And if you want to see how New York was used to its potential in this exact same period, which is what Shaft, because that's brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
No, for me, it's my stupidest bit is another projectile, and it is the little... compressed air ball that
the bullet
that Roger Moore makes Kananga swallow, and he inflates and he blows up.
He certainly had an inflated opinion of himself.
I'd say you've
it's where the puns started.
He has an underground lair. He has you know, a shark tank, and he dies in this really unsatisfactory anticlimactic way. So that's the stupidest bit for me.
Yeah. Favorite location?
Well, the place I'd want to go.
You can't say New Orleans because you've already been there.
Right. Oh, so I have to be somewhere I haven't been already. Yeah. Well, I guess I haven't been to San Monique, so I guess
you can say New Orleans because there's not really much choice in this.
I love New Orleans. I think I'll go to the Caribbean though because I fancy a palm tree holiday. What about you? You're going to say New Orleans?
Yeah, I'll probably go back to New Orleans. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is brilliant.
Or James Bond's house, depending on where that is.
That's another stupid bit.
Does he have like a house that big?
Well, he's obviously well paid. I mean, but maybe it's even on the taxpayer's dime. But just that whole first sequence is so like...
With the French spy.
Carry on. Yeah, it's so Carry On movie. And
matron.
Yeah, there's no Q in this film either. I mean,
there is no Q. That's true. There's no Desmond Llewellyn.
Yeah,
that is very true. I remember that. That is Lois Maxwell's in it for like 2 seconds, and you know, Bernard but there's no Q.
No Q.
Yeah, he didn't show up until the Man with the Golden Gun. Solix Agitator.
What's the next thing? Locations? Oh, recasting. Who
recasting? I would go a bit interesting with the casting, and I would maybe, I don't know. I even though I did like Yaphet Kotto as Dr. Kananga, and I think he's a really good villain. I would, like thinking about it now, maybe swapping him out for James L. Jones.
Oh, yes.
I think that would have been pretty cool.
A young James L. Jones would be, yeah. That's a bit like for like, though, because I do think Yaphet Kotto is very good in that film. I think that I would, let's see, I haven't given this any thought. Just for like what the fuck value casting, okay, one of two solutions. Have Quarrel Jr. played by Chris Tucker.
James! Hey, Mr. Man!
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm 007, where you at, man?
Or have J.W. Pepper played by like John Wayne.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah. Including in Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. Someone on Twitter the other day pointed out like Sheriff J.W. Pepper, a man who goes to Thailand to test drive an American car.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. Right. We didn't even get to that on the last episode. Yeah. What
I will point out, we should talk about Guy Hamilton, the director. He directed Diamonds Are Forever and The Man with the Golden Gun, and he directed Goldfinger.
He likes gold.
So in between then, he's also,
by the way, he was assistant director on The Third Man.
Yeah, and he also, he directed Force 10 from Navarone.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. That's a fun movie.
And he also did Battle of Britain with Michael Caine.
Michael Caine and everyone else.
Yeah.
That's one of those like longest day, bridge too far, all the stars in one war film, in one quite long war film. Battle of Britain's fun. Battle of Britain's a fun movie.
I haven't seen it.
What is your favorite color? What is
blue? No.
What else do we do in this sequence? Do we say something?
Done favorite bits, stupid bits, recasting, where do you want to go? I don't know.
Rating.
Rating. I would say 3.5 martinis.
I would too, but I'm going to take away half a point for the racism, so just give it 3.
You got a honky. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. I think that's it. That's our little review of Live and Let Die.
Yep.
Before we move towards the end of the episode, I just want to pay a little bit of tribute to the late, great Michael Lonsdale, who recently passed away.
We just spoke about him.
Yeah, so I did. Seeing as we have been talking about the Bond films and he was very much associated with the Bond movies, I just wanted to sort of pay a little tribute to him.
Yeah, great, great actor. And I really like that you pointed out on social media that wonderful character he plays in Ronin. Because that is a really great, he does so much with that part. Also, brilliant in Smiley's People, the follow-up to Tinker Tailor.
Yes, and he was also very briefly in the Steven Spielberg film Munich, and he's also in the cast of that film are the actor who plays Dominic Green from Quantum of Solace, and James Bond himself, Daniel Craig. So there's a few little members of the James Bond family in that film.
There always are. I feel like, what is the bondiest? We need to figure out, like, what is the bondiest non-Bond film?
That's true. Yeah.
It could be, I mean,
I don't know. I mean,
we've definitely got, like, The Longest Day is one, because you've got Connery, you've got Gert Frobe. I can't think of anyone else. This is a really boring question. We should go away and think about this.
we can come back and off podcast and talk about it. But no, yeah, that's true. That's a good question. I've been thinking about it. I'm probably stay up all night trying to figure it out. But anyway,
there's a great episode of Sharp, by the way, Sharp's Eagle, where Daniel Craig plays the bad guy and Sean Bean plays the good. Obviously, he plays Sharp. So. We've gone off track. Michael Lonsdale, R.I.P.
Yes.
Rest
in peace.
So yeah. What does it matter to you when you've got a job to do?
When you're done, you better do it well. Yeah. Well, nominated for an Oscar, that song. Best original song.
It's a good song. It's a good song.
Yeah, it's a really good song.
The rest of the Wings stuff is, you know.
Band on the Run. But anyway. Yes, that concludes another episode of Bond Backwards. We are finally finished with the Roger Moore era.
Finally!
We are done. We will be moving on to the part two of the Sean Connery era.
Yes, the brief coda.
Yes, where he came back after saying no, but that was mainly because they paid him $1 million.
Good.
Said that just mainly for that joke. But anyway, so you can check out all the other episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts, mm-hmm. Spotify, TuneIn, mm-hmm. Stitcher, SoundCloud, mm-hmm. and I did mention Podomatic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you can follow us on Twitter, Holmes Movies Pod. You can also send us an email, holmesmoviespodcast@gmail.com. Anything you want to plug, the WEB Du Bois?
Well, yeah. If you've watched Live and Let Die and you're a bit tired of all the racism, or if you watch the news and you're a bit tired of all the racism, do follow the WEB Du Bois Center, which is where I work, where we help encourage conversations around anti-racism and engage with the legacy and scholarship of W.E.B. Du Bois. And we help produce scholarship, we help produce programming. Putting it right, you know, a little bit. We recently released a short documentary about the Du Bois archive, which is at UMass Amherst, which you can check out. So, you know, it's a little place, it's a little center within a large university, but we do our bit for trying to redress the balance of both scholarship and the understanding of the history of race in the broader culture.
Yeah, I did share it on our Twitter page, but I might pin it just so if people...
Oh, you don't have to do that.
No, just to share it and...
Pin our bloody stuff. You leave the Du Bois stuff to me. We need people to listen to this bloody podcast so that we can get rich and famous.
Fair enough. But yes, do check back with us next time when we talk about Diamonds Are Forever. We're nearly in the... We're sort of into the final stretch of the Bond movies, getting close to Dr. No and close to the hopeful...
I'm going to miss this. I don't know what we're going to... We're going to have to think of a new gimmick after this because I can't be... You know, going back to just talking about regular old films is going to feel really deflating. Yeah.
Be interesting. I hope we could watch No Time to Die together when you're here in Denmark.
If you're there
and potentially talk about it. I'm excited to see it just because I don't know. I just want to see how they're going to end Daniel Craig's tenure as Bond and see how he's going to go out in a blaze of glory and things like that. And I'm hoping
let's leave that and then do some predictions on the Dr. No episode.
Definitely. Yeah. That's something I've been thinking about. Let's get
see how many we can get right.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. I've been Anders Holmes.
Huh? Oh, hi.
What's your name?
I know. Does he say Bond, James Bond in this?
No, he doesn't. No, I think it's Man with the Golden Gun where he says James Bond.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I shall see you in another life.
Yeah, goodbye, Roger Moore. We hardly knew you.
Yeah.
Stinging in the rain.
That's not funny, 007.
Where's your butler friend?
Oh, he blew a fuse.
Shocking.
Where's Drax?
He had to fly.
Positively shocking.
You missed, Mr. Bond.
I think he got the point.
Right idea, Mr. Bond. But wrong pussy.
You're not thinking that.
I sure am, boy.
You expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Goodbye, Mr. Bond.
Mr. Smith and Wesson. And you've had your six.